Welcome to Streaming Thoughts, where we stream our thoughts on movies, TV, and all things nerdy. I am Daniel.
And I am Nathan.
And welcome to our podcast. So Nathan, what is on the news docket today?
I think you should answer what's on the news docket first, because you've been doing something that distracted you from our bonus episodes of Mandalorian.
Yes, I have been guilty of doing something nerdy that has distracted me from watching The Mandalorian, and that is the new Miles Morales game for the PlayStation. Been having a little bit of fun with that.
I don't have a PlayStation personally, but man, that trailer is making me want to buy a PS5. What is your take on this game?
You know, as with the previous Spider-Man game that came out in 2018, this game is just as much fun, if not more, than the original one. It's just, you know, I told you about the physics of this game are awesome. You really do feel like Spider-Man. There's all this like fast travel points that you can travel to. I have never in my life used those, because why would you want to get into the subway when you can just swing from building to building to get your to your next objective? Fast travel, who wants to do that? This is a game that is so great at that, and I'm just having the best time.
Nice. Well, James Gunn, working on The Suicide Squad, which we're still not sure if it's a sequel or a reboot, posted something interesting on his Instagram recently.
Mm-hmm. What was it?
It was a selfie of him and Sylvester Stallone with the quote, "Always love working with my friend Stallone, and our work today on The Suicide Squad was no exception."
What?
Apparently, Sylvester Stallone is in the Suicide Squad.
Wow. So Stallone is going to be both in DC and Marvel now.
Right? Do you think he's going to have more of a role than what he had in Guardians of the Galaxy?
He might. I think he might have a bigger role in this one. I'm really curious now as to who he's going to play.
See, I'm kind of curious, because Guardians of the Galaxy was also by James Gunn. I'm kind of curious. Yeah. Are they just like really good friends, and Sylvester Stallone just walks onto set and he's like, "Oh, play this part real quick."
Right, they have to be at this point, right? It looks like it's starting to be that way. It's the same thing with Christopher Nolan and freaking Michael Caine, right?
Right.
Yeah. He's going to have him in every one of his movies from now on. Every James Gunn film is going to have Sylvester Stallone in it.
Another piece that is kind of interesting. So a movie has been put into the Oscar race, set to try and get Chadwick Boseman an Oscar. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
I have not seen that one. Is that out?
I'm not sure if that one's out yet or not. I think it's coming up yet. But it was like one of his last work. They're really kind of pushing it. It talks about a story of Ma Rainey, nicknamed Mother of Blues, played by Viola Davis, and her ambitious horn player, Levy, and the white management determined to control their music in a 1927 Chicago.
1927?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I'm interested in that movie, but I have not heard anything about it, to be honest.
And the horn player is the one that's by Chadwick Boseman. This popped up on me, and I didn't even know that he had worked on it, so I'm like, this might be another one that we need to check out, just because I love Chadwick Boseman so much.
Oh yeah, no, we should definitely look into that one. Absolutely.
Good news for 40 million movie viewers. HBO Max is finally being released on the Amazon Fire.
Hey, Amazon Fire people, you got something to look to.
Of course, still no word on when they're going to release it for the 46 million people on Roku.
Yeah.
So I'm actually kind of hoping that they get a Roku app very soon, because I don't personally have an Amazon Fire. There is another movie that is being simul-released in the theaters and HBO Max come Christmas Day.
Ooh, Gremlins 2?
No, Wonder Woman.
Oh, really? Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman is finally getting a drop-dead release date. She is going to be released in whatever theater happens to be open on Christmas Day, and they're going to do a simul release on HBO Max for everyone else. Doesn't seem like it's going to cost any more than a standard HBO Max subscription.
You know what I'm surprised about this? Is the fact that HBO looked at the success that Disney had with Mulan and decided, yeah, let's do something like that.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But, and I actually find it kind of funny that you asked about Gremlins 2, because obviously Gremlins 2 was made years ago.
Yeah.
And there's always a rumor of a Gremlins 3, but that's just a rumor. But
somebody needs to make that happen. James Gunn, Gremlins.
But what's not a rumor? Gremlins, Secrets of the Mogwai, is an animated series that is set to be made and premiered exclusively on HBO Max.
Wait, this is a real thing?
Real thing. No, they didn't get Howie Mandel back to voice Gizmo, but it is a real thing. Shame. That is coming.
Wow, I had no idea. And it's HBO Max, so that's going to be an interesting take on it.
That's what I'm wondering, because my first take on it is Secrets of the Mogwai. The Mogwai are the cute ones. Yeah. And it's an animated series, so clearly it must be for kids. But then again, this is HBO. For HBO.
You can never trust anything fully on HBO until you see it.
Yeah, it kind of brings back to the early days. I mean, what originally got my own mom into film reviews when the original Gremlins was released. Cute, cuddly Gizmo toys. McDonald's had their Gizmo Happy Meal toys. Everyone was saying, hey, Gremlins, this looks like a cute Christmas movie for kids. It's even rated PG. Let's take our kids to it.
Right? How'd that turn out?
Apparently, I don't know which one of us, but one of the kids got so scared. My mom was like, someone needs to review these movies in advance and let other moms know what's going to be in the movies.
Yeah, because let's be honest, I watched Gremlins, I think when I was like 6 or 5. I remember this movie being scary for me when I first saw it.
Yeah, and this is our topic of the day, Gremlins, the original 1984 movie.
Yeah, this was obviously before my time. I was not yet born when this movie came out.
I was 3. So, kind of ages us a little bit, you know, we got cranky old me and young optimistic Daniel. What did you think of Gremlins?
Young, non-existent Daniel. Yeah, you know what? The first time I saw this movie, like I said, I was terrified of the Gremlins. Seeing it after, it had to be more than 20 years since I've seen this movie by now, I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was such a ridiculous movie. And you can totally see this whole Steven Spielberg, that vibe of it. Right, of like the 80s Steven Spielberg when he was just being weird and trying new things.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
Well, I decided to go ahead and watch this to try and get a little bit of an experience as to what parents felt back in 1983. I went ahead and watched this with all my kids, and it was their first time seeing it.
And how was that?
Well, my oldest and my middle child both had absolutely no problem with it whatsoever. They didn't really think it was all that scary. They thought the gremlins were rather silly, almost comical at times. My daughter, in the early parts when the gremlins were first showing up, when they're first hatching from their cocoons, oh, she was pretty freaked out by that.
Yeah, that was real freaky.
She kept hiding and, you know, they didn't want to watch. But after they were pretty much all out, and I want to say pretty much by the pool scene, she had gotten over it and just thought the gremlins were silly little monster creatures. And
right. No, which, by the way, let's talk about that pool scene and examine that a little bit closer. Because when I first saw that as a kid, I thought, oh, wow, that's a lot of water. There's going to be hundreds of gremlins.
Yeah, you mean he did warn there could be thousands of gremlins, right?
Right. I was like, you know, 5, 6-year-old Daniel couldn't really comprehend exponential growth. Now, 32-year-old Daniel has a better concept. Given the volume of water and how many can reproduce, that would not be thousands. That would be hundreds of thousands.
Right?
Yeah.
They must follow some conservation of energy in biological terms where, you know, they can only reproduce so much before they need to eat and recharge their batteries, as it were, to continue to.
Right. Maybe there's
more.
That. But I thought, you know, seeing that how much water there was in that pool and how many of them were reproduced just from a single splash of water on Gizmo, he popped out 4.
Right. That was the other thing. No, he didn't. He popped out 5, didn't he?
Oh, 5. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ridiculous amount.
And how irresponsible was it when he takes Gizmo to the high school biologist, shows them how a single drop of water causes it to reproduce, and then leaves without telling the guy the rules.
Also, by the way,
so irresponsible.
What could the local high school science teacher know? I mean, does he hold some kind of PhD in like anything?
I mean, you're in a small town in Wisconsin. You don't really exactly have a major research department at a university nearby. I mean, you go with what you got.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this is what taps into the ridiculousness, right? I mean, right off the bat, you have this guy who works as an inventor and he sells inventions. Like, can you remember a time when that was ever a thing? When that was an actual legitimate job that you could do of invent things and sell them door to door?
Right. I mean, there are people who do invent things and not necessarily sell door to door, because that really wasn't his job. When we first see him, he was coming back from a pitch meeting at a company that makes bathroom supplies. When he next goes on the road, he goes to a convention where he was competing for the most original invention. Just because he liked to show it off when he was on the road, that wasn't how he was trying to make money. He was trying to actively sell it to companies.
Right. I totally get that. But again, it's just the ridiculousness of it all, right? Like in his little inventions too, of like all the stuff that he was trying to invent that are like the most impractical things ever. And how they were like not just something he was selling door to door, but in his house, right? I mean, the kitchen was just like the most insane kitchen.
I love how every single time his son goes to do something, he stops and looks at the machine with incredible trepidation. He's like, do I really want to use his automatic egg cracker thing? Do I really want to use this orange juice machine?
Right. And also, how does one single orange produce that much stuff, that much pulp and juice?
Hey, what can I say? I mean, apparently his dad created a very efficient automatic juicer that just tends to explode.
Right?
World's most efficient juicer. Just stand back or you get wet.
Right. The smoke trapping machine. That was my favorite. That whole sequence when he walked out of that gas station into his car and that dude would not stop coughing because he was such a terrible thing. But it just lasted just the right amount for that to be ridiculously funny.
Although,
I loved it.
The funny thing is after this movie was made, someone actually did invent and bring to market a smokeless ashtray.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's basically just an ashtray that you open it up and you put out your cigarette and close it so it doesn't really smoke into the house while the cigarette butt goes out. But still, yeah, it became a real product.
Why not? So there are a few things in this movie, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, that the PG rating of things was just a bizarre rating for some of the parts in this film. There are certain moments, like, you know, the gremlins messing with the old woman's electric
chairlifter.
The
chair that goes up the stairs, right?
Yeah, the thing that goes up the stairs, and just how they mess with that, and she was just flung out. And by the way, there was like an impact. You saw the mannequin or whatever thing that they used. You saw that whole impact and everything. I remember when the first time I watched it when I was 5 or 6, I remember that really freaked me out too, because she was just flung out there, and I just literally saw someone die, and I was like, whoa, this is PG.
I mean, the whole time before that, they set her up as the worst human being ever.
Oh, I know.
Also, that you don't feel bad that she gets murdered by gremlins when she's just trying to get up her stairs.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, there's only 2 floors in her house. How many circles does she go around to get up to the top of that lift?
Right?
I was like, wow, that, like, the middle 3/4 of her house was to be dedicated to a very low, gradual stair that goes up to the 2nd floor. And why does she need a chairlift for that if it's such a gradual step?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, they needed to figure out a way to kill her, right?
But then again, she may have been one of the more gruesome deaths.
Yeah.
But they didn't shy away from the gremlins killing anybody. The biology teacher, he got killed, and he got grabbed and pulled under the desk, and they cut away, and he comes back to find his dead body. But still, he died.
Yeah.
First death of the movie.
Yeah, for sure. And then when Stripe had this freaking crossbow, shot Billy, when he also grabbed the chainsaw and tried to kill him with that too. It's like all of these things that were like, what? This is like some seriously violent stuff that I wouldn't necessarily care, but given the rating of the movie, it just surprised me. I remember hearing about that, actually, about discussions between the MPAA and Spielberg about the rating of this movie, because some of the stuff is just pretty freaking dark.
Well, I mean, the MPAA is very secretive about how they come about their ratings.
Yeah.
In the early days of the internet, they opened up a little bit about it, where, like, for instance, when the Star Wars Special Editions were being re-released, A New Hope, mm-hmm. you could actually go on to the MPAA's website, type in Star Wars, and you would see every single time it was rated by the MPAA. Funny note, there was a rating where it was given a slightly higher rating back before they gave it the original rating on the special edition, and it specifically noted that it was for violence.
Hmm.
It was given moderate violence, and then I think they downplayed it to the original rating for mild violence or something like that.
Hmm.
And you know what the speculation has always been? The one thing that changed, they got it the higher rating that was then changed to give it the family-friendly PG rating.
No, which one?
Again, they're secretive. There's no way to be certain about it, but everyone thinks that that is the moment George Lucas made the change, so Han fired in self-defense instead of cold-blooded murder.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Up until Rise of the Sith, George Lucas was very determined every Star Wars movie had to be PG. But that's kind of what I'm wondering about is like, so these gremlins are monsters. You want them to be monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So did they allow it to have a PG rating based on the justification of the violence? Or is it because when they weren't being violent, they were in like, say, the bar, they were just a bunch of silly little creatures?
And I think it's tricky, right? Because that was a whole point of contention, right, of this movie. I mean, it's the part of this movie that gave your mom a reason to review movies is because of that, right? It's because it had a rating and what was presented was not that.
Right. Let's be honest. I honestly, if I were to just watch this movie and give it a pegged rating myself, I would have said PG-13.
Yeah. For sure.
Again, as an example of my oldest kid, who's granted isn't 13 yet, but he was old enough to immediately recognize everything these gremlins doing was just silly and ridiculous.
For sure.
I mean, I don't know where a tiny 2-foot-tall gremlin found a trench coat so he could flash the bartender, but just they're causing random mayhem and destruction. Yeah. But they were, to her at least, they were harmless. They were just messing with everything and destroying and mimicking the worst aspects of human culture of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And my older kid could recognize this. My youngest kid initially found all of this stuff to be extremely horrifying, which, to be fair, kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, that was my reaction.
But at some point, you do have to let the kids have a little bit of introduction to horror movies. And I personally think this is kind of a harmless one to use because, again, by the end of the movie, they were just silly comical monsters that she could laugh at.
Also, let's talk about the silly comical monsters for a bit, because I think that the level of ridiculousness was turned to like 11 when it came to the gremlins. Not only can they spawn like a bunch of them just by throwing water on them, but when they hatch and they hatch as full-grown gremlins, they have not only the knowledge to communicate with each other, but engineering degrees, apparently, because they also know exactly what wires to cut, whether it's mechanical or electrical. They know everything.
Well, you know where the story of gremlins came from, right? Like the monster gremlins, not the movie?
Yeah, the monster gremlins. Yeah, yeah.
The monster of the gremlins came from World War I when we were first utilizing airplanes in warfare. And the World War I pilots, every time they had a mechanical failure that brought their plane down, they would always swear there was some gremlin monster that attacked their plane.
Right. I remember that.
So that's where the idea came from, that they are able to mess with electronics. And there's a guy saying, like, oh, yeah, they put gremlins inside those foreign vehicles to mess them up.
Yeah, right.
Or when they were playing with the streetlights to mess with it, like, they knew they'd get them both green because that's what gremlins do, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. And no, and that's great, right? But that's the thing, is the ridiculousness of that, right? Of knowing that they are these creatures that are just born and they are completely just not extremely intelligent creatures, but somehow when it comes to anything that has to deal with mechanical or electrical or anything like that, they have geniuses.
A PhD
and they know exactly what wire to cut, what nut to unscrew, what anything. And it's just so ridiculous. And I love that part of it, right? I mean, this is what kind of gave that ridiculous turn into it. And seeing that played out in the way that they did, especially when it comes to the pets, right, that they used for it. Because if I'm not mistaken, this is another movie that used stop motion, right?
Well, it was a combination of stop motion and puppetry, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Which is, honestly, I think that's kind of another thing that maybe altered people's perception, because this is just 2 years after Spielberg's most famous movie, E.T., came out.
Yes.
I bet a lot of people were expecting another E.T.-type movie.
Oh, I'm sure.
Pulling the heartstrings and, you know, family excitement.
Yeah.
But not what he gave us.
not even close. The writing of this movie, by the way, which was written by Chris Columbus. And no, not the dick who decided to come over to this part of the world, but we're talking about the director, writer-director. Most people will not know the name Chris Columbus, but if I say Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and the Chamber of Secrets, yeah, he directed those two.
Actually, I was going to point that out. I was actually rather impressed because he eventually went on to be the director for the original Harry Potter movies.
Yeah. Yeah. My thing with this is that the writing at times just felt very inconsistent. Mainly, I think that what really I think was a moment in the film that just completely didn't fit for me was Kate's story about her dad. That was a messed up story. I was not expecting it to go in that direction. And then as she went on telling the story, it was like, whoa, this is actually real dark. Holy crap.
That story actually almost got cut because no one could tell whether that was supposed to be a sad story or a funny story.
Definitely not funny. I consider that more sad.
Like, is he trying to be morbidly funny with this, or is he trying to get us to be sympathetic to this girl? I don't know which one he's going for. So that whole speech actually almost got cut from the entire movie.
And that makes sense because, I mean, it's pretty dark. It's a pretty dark story, which again gives more credence to our previous conversation about the rating of this film.
Guess what other fantastic movie Chris Columbus was a executive producer for?
No, which one?
2005 Fantastic Four.
Oh, perfect. Oh my God, he was also the one for Rise of the Silver Surfer. Wow, he did both of those. He, or at least executive produced both of those.
Some other movies that he's known for directing was Home Alone, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
The Bicentennial Man, which I actually thought he did a good job with that one.
Wait, he wrote Little Nemo. Did you know that?
I did not know that one.
He wrote that freaking movie. That's hilarious.
Did you know that he did the screenplay for Goonies?
Yes, he did.
So this guy has been all over the place. You have definitely either seen his writing or you have seen his directing style or seen the movies that he thinks are so great he's going to put his money into and be a producer for.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you about the set design of this movie and the setting, because there was a lot of different stuff that we saw. I mean, I want to get your take on the general neighborhood, the look and feel of that. And then also, just important, I want to hear about what you thought of Chinatown.
Well, the small town of Wisconsin, I think, is a great setting for this kind of widespread chaos that ultimately doesn't get a lot of notice in the whole grand scheme of things. Like, could you imagine if they did something insane, like decide to put it inside of a skyscraper in a major city? Everybody would know about Gremlins then.
Right? Exactly. But somehow no one found out.
Right? But Chinatown, especially the shop where they find Gizmo. Man, can you get any more cliche? Like, take every single stereotype for a mysterious Chinese shop and just keep shoving it in there. Do they need electricity and working lights? No, they don't have that. Give them candles. Candles are much more practical. Yeah.
Especially with all this wood.
All these old wooden relics. I mean, no danger from candles there.
Right.
That place was a fire hazard.
Nah, fires don't happen.
Oh, what was your opinion of the setting?
You know, the sets were, like, again, just another aspect of being, I think the word that I've found for this movie is cartoony, from how the characters are written. Like that old woman, for example, who was just the absolute worst. You know, like that kind of writing to me was very cartoony, very caricature-esque, right, of writing where you do that. And they give that also to the set. So Chinatown felt like this very extremely just the absolute most stereotypical Chinatown you could find in movies, right?
Right.
They took that from the outside of the set, which, by the way, I do want to point out, the level of detail that they went into some of these sets, especially Chinatown, was insane. It was just really crazy amount of detail.
I mean, Spielberg was kind of known for that stuff for the longest time.
That's true.
Going that extra mile, so
yeah.
There is that.
Absolutely, yeah. Even though he didn't direct this movie, and I know that his name was all over the place in this movie, I remember. But obviously,
well, yeah, they gotta cash in on his ET fame.
Right, exactly. And that's super interesting, right? That the movie literally says Steven Spielberg's Gremlins, but he didn't write and or direct this movie.
I mean, at least Tim Burton wrote Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right, exactly. I don't think Steven Spielberg wrote the original, or no, right? I think he bought the rights, if I recall correctly, for the movie.
Yeah.
But again, like, this level of detail in sets was really great. The only problem that I had with the set piece was on regular small town Wisconsin neighborhood. The whole time I kept saying, guys, you're overdoing it with the fake snow. There's too much of it. You need to do less.
You have to admit, it did take a while for Hollywood to discover a fake snow that actually kind of looked and responded like real snow that they could do on a nice, warm Hollywood set.
Right, for sure.
You know what they eventually settled on for fake snow, by the way? And this goes all the way up to the X-Men movies. What they use for fake snow in that, potato flakes.
Potato flakes.
In fact, you can go, and there's a story of Mystique, who's in basically nothing but a bikini and body paint. I want to say it was Magneto, but one of the actors, I want to say it was either Magneto or Xavier. There's a story of them helping her out by scraping the potato flakes that started to dissolve and turn into mashed potatoes off of her feet between set takes.
Oh, that's gross.
It is. Because I remember how ridiculous it was. It was one of those two great actors, and I'm like, you wouldn't picture them doing that, but they're like just being friendly and helping her out. And
yeah, no, I mean, that's great. That's so weird that it's potato flakes. I mean, it makes sense. I guess it could work.
You spread enough of them out and it looks like nice powdery snow, and when you walk through it, it makes good impressions of your feet and everything else.
Unless you're an elf, in which case it doesn't.
Yeah, right.
On the set, though, it's not that they used the wrong kind of snow. I think they used too much of it. Like, it was everywhere. And I'm like, guys, that's not how
scrape
it snows.
Scrape your windows.
Yeah, like, did this town recently go through a blizzard or something? Because this would not be the case.
That was the biggest thing for me that took me out of it. Like, yeah, these people definitely are not in Wisconsin, because all the cars, like, if the car is crusted with that much ice, you would be out there scraping it off before you get going.
Yeah.
No, they would have the car crusted in ice, and they would just turn on the wipers, and it would become perfectly clear. I'm like, no.
Nope.
No, that doesn't happen that way. Not-
That is not how real snow works. Yeah. Overall, I felt that the set designs were really well done, and how they took us from one place to another. I felt like that the different areas that we got to see of the town were really well made. At the end, when we went to that department store, which, by the way, you know, it was totally the 80s, right? In 1984. And, you know, department stores have a whole shelf behind a glass door with guns, you know, as you do. Very easy for those kinds of things to get a hold of by gremlins. Especially when you put them behind glass.
That's America for you. I mean, we did not have any real comprehensive restrictions on the display or sale of firearms until, you know, maybe the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to keep in mind, the 80s was a time that they made movies of someone going into a department store, asking to see a gun, and asking to see the ammunition and be able to load it. People were like, not even really blinking an eye on it too much.
Yeah. Yep.
Which I want to say that was the Terminator movie, I believe, that did that.
Yeah, the Terminator. Yeah, you're right. You're right. The Terminator movie totally did that. Holy crap. I forgot about that.
Show me this gun. Show me this ammunition. Thank you. Okay, now I'm going to shoot you and take all the rest of your guns.
Just like, what? Clearly that would not have happened today, but oh my God. Yeah, those were the 80s. Super messed up times.
I mean, nowadays, if you try to film a scene inside of a gun shop and they show the gun without a trigger lock on it, it'd be like, yeah, no, that's not real.
Right.
That's a fake store.
And you couldn't buy that on Sears.
Right.
And just,
oh, you can still buy them at Walmart.
But again, like, I just bringing to those different spaces, I thought that they did a really good job with that. Now, I did want to ask you about Hoyt Axton's character, the dad. I want to ask you more about the end of the movie, you know, because he was away this whole time, right, when the gremlins were wrecking havoc, and then he shows up at the end in the mall or the department store.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that last sequence of him just showing up?
I guess you could say it was a little bit of a deus ex machina, but I mean, they were saying that he was coming back soon, and they always kept him in the foreground, so you kind of knew where he was at and what his position was as they should to the town.
Mm-hmm.
So I could kind of see it going both ways on people's opinions on that one. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, why is he not going, guys, what the F happened here? I was gone, now I come back, cars are on fire, buildings are on fire, some cars even flipped out. I find you at the mall with a freaking bolt in your arm, witness this creature being melted in front of me a la Raiders of the Lost Ark. What is happening here?
He saw how his inventions always turned out. He sees this kind of stuff all the time.
Right? Just like a regular Tuesday. And I'm
just like a regular Tuesday for him.
I'm just like, what? Why is he not surprised to find a town in the state that he's in? In fact, he's just like, pats him on the back like, attaboy, good job on like defeating the gremlins. But seriously, what happened here?
That's another thing on defeating the gremlins. going back to what we were talking about with how many created in the pool, mm-hmm. they just assumed that all the gremlins had gathered inside that movie theater. I think it was only Stripe that seemingly escaped.
Yeah, because he wanted to get candy.
But they have no way of knowing that.
No.
There is nothing in this movie that guarantees that they cleaned up all the gremlins other than the fact that they are not currently wreaking havoc on this small town.
Right, exactly. And also remember that Billy said there were at least 1,000 of them. And I'm pretty sure that theater was not holding 1,000 gremlin.
Right? I mean, he didn't really know. He was acting like how we were acting, going like, oh, well, I don't know how many there are. There could be hundreds, there could be thousands. They jumped into a swimming pool. How many is that going to make?
Right? One thing that does tend to work in favor of humans is that gremlins have to hide from the sunlight, otherwise they die.
Right. Once sunrise came up, they should be fine. But once that sets again, you know, you never know.
Right, exactly. You never know.
And I have to question the biological life stages of these things. Because aside from Gizmo, the rest of them were immediately mischievous mogwai mm-hmm. that wanted to eat after midnight so that they right. could transform into their gremlin stage.
Right.
But then when they got water, they didn't reproduce young mogwai to go through the pupal stage again. They created full-grown gremlins. Biologically speaking, having that mogwai and that pupal stage doesn't really make a lot of sense.
It doesn't really, right? By the way, that's another thing that bothered me. No one in the entire movie was like, but seriously, what the F is this thing? Right? Like, what is this mogwai thing? No one was acting surprised. Like, everyone was like, oh, how cute. And I'm like,
it's a cute little animal of some sort.
You're acting as if you've just seen, like, some kind of, you know, like, monkey or something that, like, oh, yeah, that's totally normal. I know what monkeys look like. But this does not look like any creature in the animal kingdom. So that's another thing that was like, why isn't everyone acting more surprised?
Actually, there is a clawed primate in the Indonesia part of the world that was thought to be extinct until some scientists found four of them. They were only able to put radio collars on three of them because one evaded the trap, and they had actually a hard time putting collars on them because apparently they can rotate their head 180 degrees.
Whoa.
But a lot of people actually see pictures of this and they think they look like mogwai.
Really?
Yeah, they have like the big eyes, the cute little nose and mouth. They're similar ears, but a lot smaller. So yeah, it's some sort of cute exotic primate that I've never heard of or seen before, and they didn't have internet.
That's true.
I have to admit, in 1984 dollars, $200 would be about the equivalent of $500 today.
Yeah, so that's another thing.
Expensive for a pet, but damn cheap for an exotic, rare, one-of-a-kind pet.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good thought, right? It's like, you know, $500 for a dog or a cat, that's a lot of money, right? But $500 for some really weird exotic animal, yeah, that's really inexpensive.
Probably a more practical price for something as rare and exotic as what a mogwai would be like $2,000 in 1980 money.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Something like that, which would be like $10,000 or more in today's money. Or
$5,000-ish, yeah.
Yeah, $5,000. But I was thinking more like charging $10,000 for some, you know, exotic creature like that, especially if it's like the only one in existence. Right? Yeah, I would not charge any less than, you know, like $20,000 maybe, and even in 1984.
Yeah, if they weren't so evil, I mean, they reproduce nice and easy, then I guess that could make them a bit cheaper.
Oh my God, right? Yeah. All right, so with that, Nathan, should we jump into our TLDL?
Too long, didn't listen.
All right, and this is the section where we give you our closing thoughts on the movie or TV series that we're talking about. So Nathan, Gremlins 1984 TLDL.
Welcome to small town Wisconsin, where everybody knows each other and everybody is up in everyone else's business. Perfect backdrop for some wild, zany, chaotic fun. Rated PG, should probably have been rated PG-13, but a good, safe introduction, I think, to a horror element for younger kids once you think they are starting to get old enough to be curious about the more horror genres out there.
No, absolutely. I think that this movie is a really great, ridiculous film that can be enjoyed in December and the Christmas time, right? I think it's got a really good, ridiculous story that's funny, that's at times can be a little dark. But I think overall, this is a great film that can be enjoyed with the family. I enjoyed it probably more this time around than when I first saw it, when it terrified me. So yeah, I'm giving it a thumbs up for this one.
So with that, Daniel, final thought to you today. Gremlins, is it a Christmas movie or not?
Oh, come on. This is totally a Christmas movie. The Mogwai was given to him for a Christmas present. Absolutely a Christmas movie.
If you agree with Daniel or you disagree with Daniel, you can let us know on Facebook at
Streaming Thoughts and on Twitter at
Streaming Geek. This has been Nathan.
And this has been Daniel.
Thank you for listening.